Let's begin the shir tonight is in Le'iloi Nishmat, my father-in-law, Moshe Chaim, ben Matityahu Binyamin. It is his 15th yahrzeit. My wife had actually, she's probably yelling at me right now not to say anything, but my wife had actually written something which was very beautiful. So I am going to, it's been 15 years this evening. 15 years ago, my father left this world, redeemed from the suffering of the body, but able to return his soul to its creator as innocent and pure as when it was given to him 77 years earlier. My father, Moshe Chaim ben Matityahu ben Yamin and Tova, never had the chance to study in yeshiva, but always chose to befriend those who did. He had tremendous respect for Torah scholarship and had that rare unquestioning faith in Jewish law and tradition that made him an unbreakable link in the chain of Mesorah. He was not a philosopher, but lived all his days with complete faith in the love of Torah and mitzvot and love of fellow man. His greatest pleasure, what he loved more than anything else, was to help others. I never once heard him say that he was not available, unable, too tired, or too busy to help, no matter who was asking or what was asked. And usually he didn't even have to ask, he offered and he meant it. And it did him good. He did not talk about it, he didn't brag and did not publicize. He never even mentioned all the kind acts of or the acts of kindness that he did for all kinds of people, indiscriminately and without cost-benefit calculations. He also never asked, ever, for something in return. He would do what he could and immediately forget that he had done for someone else. He didn't keep mental records and never felt that he was owed anything by anyone. I never heard him say a bad word about another person. I never heard even a hint of cynicism or sarcasm pass his lips. I never heard him complain. I don't think for even one second that he thought that something had come to him. He didn't think for even one second that he was better than anyone else. More important, smarter. But he was. Better, smarter, and more important. You don't come across humility like this every day. For 15 years now, you don't come across humility like this at all. May his memory be blessed. So the shir tonight will be Eloi Nishmato, and let us begin. This week's parsha is Balotcha, and for the most part, I'm going to spend time in the very, very beginning of the parsha, just really the starting point, the first mitzvah, even though it is an incredibly rich parsha. There's many, many episodes and many episodes which are compelling and interesting. Let's start in the beginning. And the sources were posted. I could actually send the link as well. But let's start. You have it in front of you. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor daber el Aharon v'amarta elav b'halotcha t'neirot el mul pnei ha'menorah ya'iru shivat ha'neirot. And over here, Aaron is told that he should light the candles, and I'm just going to say, and so on and so forth. Vayaskin Aaron, and Aaron goes and he does this. A little bit afterwards, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe le'mor, kach levi mitoch bnei Yisrael v'tiharet otam. And here the levim are being chosen. Now both of those ideas or topics or themes, Aaron lighting the menorah on the one hand, and the selection of the levim on the other, is something which we're used to, we're familiar with, we've heard them before, this is not the first time. Actually, so much so that we need actually to question ourselves and why we're being told this at this point. Which is, the Mishkan's already completed. I mean, everything about the Mishkan should have been done. Why are we being told at this point in terms of the lighting of the Neirot? And what you can find is that a number of commentaries are preoccupied with this idea, and or I don't even say the word preoccupied, that they're troubled by this idea. Indeed, why are we being told right now, again, about our own lighting the candles? So the Rishpam gives an answer, and you could decide if you like the answer or not. The Rishpam says, Bahalotcha, Lefisha Melechet Tadir Hi Zo. And we're going to see others will say the same, but maybe with a slight of a nuance which is different. Because this is a perpetual mitzvah. The lights in the Mishkan have to always be lit. Hiskira Khan, and therefore it's mentioned here. Why? Because it's perpetual. Alpha Pisha Koma Lachot Mishkan Nigmrut, because everything else is done. Melechet Hadlakad Mara Lod Nigmar Ki Tadir. Even though everything else was done, this one's mentioned because it's perpetual. So it's a good answer. I think you enjoyed it, but I could just counter and say, well, if it's perpetual and it could be anywhere, that really begs the question of why it's here. Which means what he's saying is that it's said outside of the building of the Mishkan because it needs to be done. It's actually never completed in a sense. It's always an obligation. So why here? So you do sense from his answer that he's troubled. The Bechor Shor, again, is clearly troubled by the same question. But Lotcha Teneirot, לפי שדיבר בהקמת המשכן ובחנוכתו, ואין בית בנוי ראוי לבוא שם הארון עד שידליקו לו את הנר ויבשמו לו את הבית. והביסום כבר נעשה ידי נשיאים שהביאו כפות מלאות קטורת. ואתה מדבר בדלקות הנרות. So I will translate and explain. When is a house complete? So, you know, those of you who know, wife and I, we sort of just finished, I think we finished, building a new house. So the question is, when is a house completed? Or I would put it differently, when is a house a home? So obviously the answer is when you get curtains. Curtains turns a house into a home. But that's not what the Bechor Shur says. Bechor Shur says, what completes the house? He says two things complete the house. One is the lighting of the candle inside, the lights in the house, which means the difference, he's saying in a certain sense, is between a cold, dark ruin versus a house which has light in it is the light. And the other thing he says is the smell of the incense and so on. And he says, well, the Nisim, all of them in the course of their day, let's say, offerings which were brought last week's Parsha Naso, all of them also had Ketoret, so therefore the beautiful smell is there, and all that we're waiting for is the lighting, so that's why the lighting is mentioned. So you realize now both the Rashbam and the Bechor Shur were troubled by the same question. The question that troubled is why right now is Aaron being instructed to light the candles? And one answer we have from the Rashbam, because it's perpetual, and the other from the Bechor Shur, is because that's the last thing which we're waiting for. That, you know, you put the lights on, and now it's a house. Where the opposite is true, when it's time, you know, to shut down and to leave, you should put the lights off, right? The last one leave, put the lights off, and then that's it. Rabbeinu Bachaye, again, he's also troubled by this, and he's going to tell us that he's quoting Midrashim, v'chachamim zal osim oto milashon iloi shekach omar from the word ba'alotcha, ba'alotcha makodesh baruch hu, lo shani tzarich la'ora shelachem. He goes, I don't need your light. So this is also something which perhaps we should note and think about it, and will be very obvious, but maybe we would not appreciate it. I mean, the whole concept of the Mishkan and certainly the Korbanot there, it's not because God is hungry. It's not because God needs any of this. The whole idea of the Korban, from the word likarev, to come close, is something which man needs and God doesn't need. So he's just adding that concept over here. And he's saying is that it's not like God is sitting in the dark. It's that man needs to light this. And it's not something which God needs. So there, again, really what he's telling us is that this is a human need, but this is not a God need. He then continues, and as it says over here, it indicates he's quoting from the Tanchuma. We're going to look at the Medrash Rabbah a little bit to see, but again, I just want to go one step further with what he says, because what he says is really interesting. Ela sheta'iru lefanai, I want you to light in front of me, Kiderech sheha'arti lachem bad midbar ba'amud ha'esh. Kidei la'alot etchem mipnei ha'umot sheyu omrim hech Yisrael me'irim lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu lefi shehu ma'ir lakol. V'lo mitoch ha'choshech hotzeiti ora ve'eini tzarech la'ora shelachem. So let me try to explain what it is that he is saying. Because again, maybe one felt that wasn't all that simple, but it really is interesting what he said. His point is that, again, God does not need light. Okay, so that, for us, that was axiomatic, that was clear, that was understood. Of course, God doesn't need light. But he says that the light which is used over here, or utilized over here, is actually here to remind us of something. It's here to remind us that God took us out of Egypt. We were surrounded by clouds, but it also speaks of the light that went with us and protected us as it were. Which means he's telling us that the lighting in the Mishkan is zecher, it's a memorial for that lighting that took place. But I just want to state this a little bit deeper, and what I'm going to say is really going to be necessary as we move onward, and that is that the light in the desert, when God is protecting us, is exactly that. It's an indication of God's protection. It's an indication of God's involvement with us. You know, we think about how it is, especially in the land of Israel, we're told the land where God's eyes are upon the land all the time, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. it's a land which has what we would call mor hashkacha, which really means overseeing, as it were. And a lot of the Kabbalists speak about this. The Vilna Gaon tells us that in other places of the world, it's as if God is peeking through the crevices, but when it comes to the land of Israel, God is looking straight at us through the window, as it were. Mitzitz mecharakim is in chutz laretz, but God by us looks through the chalonot, he looks through the window, and therefore it's a closer and more intimate relationship. But in the desert, it was something which was absolutely manifest, because, you know, as it is that somebody may feel, again, this is completely subjective, unless it's you, then you think you're being objective, it's completely subjective that in the land of Israel, there is more of divine presence. There's more of this feeling of God's involvement. There's more of this feeling of hashkacha. But that's a feeling. We sense it. And indeed we do. We sense it. But in the desert, it wasn't just something which we sensed. In the desert, it was actually something which was real, because, I say real, it was discernible, because that was the light which accompanied us. So he's saying is that for the Mishkan to be something, and ultimately the Beit HaMikdash should be something which is significant, religiously significant, it's indication that God is indeed with us. You know, one of the things that we noted last week is that one of the names of Mishkan, Mishkan Eidut, it's testimony that God is with the Jewish people. So that is something which has not always been so simple in history. So keeping in mind of this point that the candles or the light may represent this idea that God is with us, we'll be able to continue and to see some of the other sources that address this. The Midrash, which, as I said, I think that it's what Rabbeinu Mechai was hinting at in source number 5, he writes, Amar Lama Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lo Shani Tzarech Lachem, Elo Shatayri Li Kederech Sharati Lachem. It's not that I need it, but I'm giving you an opportunity to pay me back, as it were, to do for me what I did for you. Lama, la'lot etchem, which is from the word ba'lotcha, to uplift you. B'pnei ha'umot. But that's the important part over here. In terms of the nations, shiyu omrim ra'u hech Yisrael me'irim l'mishu hume'ir l'kol olam. That God, as it were, lightens up, or causes light for the whole world, and it's Am Yisrael who causes this light for God. He continues and he says, well, before we get to the continuation, what he says, there's actually a very interesting midrash which is found in Midrash Rabbah, which is not right in front of you, where it writes, and those of you may know the song, Yerushalayim. This is found in Midrash Rabbah, Bereishit Rabbah Nuntet Hey, Yerushalayim Or Shel Olam. Jerusalem is the light of the world. Of course, Jerusalem is what has the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash. So essentially, the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, when you light the candles, it causes lights to be in the entire world. Shenemar, v'hol chagoyim la'orech mihu orish Yerushalayim, but what is the light of Yerushalayim? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's God. Which means it is Yerushalayim lights the world, but God lights Yerushalayim, which means this idea of this light that God accompanied with us and took care of us, and when we light the candles, we actually cause something really interesting to happen. We cause this relationship with God to become manifest, and that's ultimately what Yerushalayim stands for, and that's ultimately what the Beit HaMikdash is. So what you're saying is the lighting of the candles, again, just now became a little more interesting. It doesn't necessarily answer any of the questions that I raised so far, which means why is this set over here? What happened right now, this has to be mentioned, and this is what we're going to be told by the continuation of that midrash which we started to read. So let's go back and continue in the midrash. At motzei lemala, achad esar shvatim hikrivu. We found beforehand, again last week, Parshat Naso, 11 tribes brought their offerings, the nisi'im, the leaders of each of those tribes. And now it's real interesting how the Midrash phrases this. Vishavit Ephraim hikriv. So it doesn't say there are 12 tribes. It's the 11 tribes plus Ephraim. Because Ephraim is not the one who should have done it, because Ephraim is really the extra tribe, as it were. See, I could have said this differently. 12 tribes, and Yosef becomes 2 tribes. But it's not what it says. 11 tribes plus Ephraim. So that 11 plus 1 is obviously 12. V'kola nisi'im hikrivu. And all of the nisi'im brought offerings. And here's where it tells us, chutz nisiyo shel Levi, except for one nasi, and that was the nasi of Levi. Mi haya nisiyo shel Levi, and who was the nasi of Levi? It's Aaron. Shenemar v'chem Aaron tichtov amate Levi, v'Aaron lo hikrivim nisiyim. So over here, the Midrash now is telling us what is really the problem which is going to be taking place. all the Nasiim bring, one Nasi doesn't bring. Not only does one Nasi not bring, someone displaced that Nasi, and that is Shevet Ephraim, displaced him. V'haya Omer, and Aaron said, Oy li shema bishvili, ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu makapel shivto shel Levi. Maybe because of me, God has rejected all of Levi. So of course, the background to this we understand. The background is that Aaron bears responsibility in terms of the Chet HaEgel. By the way, just in case we miss the point, last week in Naso, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, when the first of the 12 tribes started to bring, that day is the day that Nadav and Avihu died. So I just wanted to think about that for a moment. Nadav and Avihu die, the 12 tribes bring, and one tribe doesn't bring, and that tribe is Levi, and Aaron just now got severely. Now, you, what word do you want to use now? Do you want to say his own sense of being reprimanded, his own sense of karma, his own sense of ashkacha, his own sense of guilt? And maybe that's the best word. But yeah, he was there on that day serving, and they walked in to serve, and looked what happened. Is that the Mishkan went and bit them? The Mishkan went and took them and swallowed them and ate them, and they're gone. And do you want to tell me that Aaron does not feel any responsibility? So again, if we go back to context, it's not just that all 11 tribes plus one brought. And now you have to, again, that plus one becomes real interesting. It's that Aaron is the only Nasi that doesn't bring. See, the way the Midrash is stating this is actually very interesting. And I really try to make the question of the Midrash, or the statement of the Midrash, as compelling as possible, because I could have had a response. Or maybe the way I explained it is going to be so good that my question on this is going to fall off. But it continues, and it says that Aaron says, maybe because of me, my whole Shevet has now been rejected. And therefore, I'm going to say it again, the rejection of Nadav and Avihu is just the starting point. And how does he know now that two more of his sons are not going to die next week when they serve in the Mishkan? How does he know that he's not going to die the next day that he serves? Maybe this whole thing over here is some way of getting rid of those who are unworthy. And maybe at this moment, all that Aaron feels is this unworthiness. Maybe my actions now have caused the rejection of this entire tribe of my tribe. Go tell him. Don't be afraid. Because again, maybe there was real fear there. No, I have something waiting for you which is even greater than the thing which was done by all the other Nisim and those offerings that they brought. Le'olam. Sorry, did I skip anything? Okay. When you uplift the Neirot, HaKorbanot calls man shebeit HaMikdash kayam. The Korbanot will only be when there is still a Beit HaMikdash. Him Noagim, will we have this right? Aval HaNeirot lo'olam. But the Neirot will be forever. El mul pnei mor ya'iru v'kol ha'brachot sh'natati lecha l'varechet b'nai einem b'tei lo'olam. And those of you who don't... excuse me, who don't recall or didn't notice, Birchat Kohanim was also mentioned right around this area. So therefore it's saying is that the Neirot and the Birchat Kohanim are mentioned, he says, those things continue, which means the Korbanot will come to an end. The Mishkan will come to an end, the Beit HaMikdash will come to an end, the Korbanot will come to an end. But Jews will continue lighting, and Jews will continue, Kohanim will continue blessing. So therefore, I gave you something which is a sense of permanence, and this is something which again I still really want to try to understand, but I think that we have at least a partial understanding. The Midrash in Tenchuma, it goes on to say, you know, God again, Lobishfil Sha'anit Sarich Lanerot, that same sentiment, I don't really need it at all. And it goes to what we saw before, when a person builds a house, and explains, actually the Midrash is a little more interesting, how it's lit. Normally you're going to build it, some of you remember a similar thing to Tevat Noach perhaps, normally you would build it in such a way that the light is going to come in. Shlomo Hamikdash o Meir Lachutz. And that's what I'm saying, is that when we read before the Midrash that Yerushalayim Oro Shel Olam, the Oro Shel Olam of Yerushalayim comes from the inside, which really comes from the Shekhinah, and that's what's really interesting, because Aaron or the Kohen is lighting it, but we're told it's God is actually the one who's lighting, which I'm saying again, the lighting of the candles go back, as we saw in the other Midrash, to the lighting that God did for us and the sense that the Shekhinah is with us, that God is with us. And therefore, the idea of the Beit HaMikdash lit up represents the Shekhinah which is with us. And it goes from inside outside and lights up all of the world, which comes from Yerushalayim, which comes from the Beit HaMikdash, which comes from the menorah, which comes from the God, but nonetheless, the actual process is being done by man. Now, with everything we've seen, we can go and we can look at Rashi, because Rashi cited the Midrash. Balotcha, lama nisvacha parsha menorah leparshat haNesiim? Why is the menorah mentioned right now, again following the Nesiim? Lefi kishira'a Aaron chanukat haNesiim, chalsha az da'ato, shlo ya'imahim b'chanuka, lohu v'lo shifto. Because Aaron gets depressed and he sees that he's not included, neither him nor anyone of his tribe. Amalu kodesh baruch chayecha shalcha gdula meshalahim. Because you're going to light and going to prepare the candles, and you realize that how nice Rashi was in this explanation. The Midrash that I read to you, I think, actually captured the pathos much more, and it also added a little bit more also in terms of the Berakot Kohanim. And let's continue, because the next three sources are going to take us in a slightly different direction. The Chizkuni says the Beryl Aron Nisbacha, right again, Nisbacha Mitzvazu, Achar Chanukah Tanesiim. And the Chanukah Tanesiim, the word Chanukah over here means the consecration, the beginning, the creation of the Mishkan, the turning the Mishkan into a Mishkan. It goes back to my point before, that you know you built all the walls and you have everything there, but how do you turn it into the house? That is the Chanukah Tabayit. So the Chanukah Tabayit was done by the Nesiim. The Fishat Motzei Shneimasar Shvatim. So again, that's not the way the Midrash put it. The Midrash said 11 plus 1. Shneimasar Shvatim Sheikrivu Korbanam L'Chanukat Mizbeach V'Shevet Levi Lo Hikriv. And Shevet Levi didn't bring Klomar, but you Mitzarim. But Mirim Lama Rachatu Meyakriv L'Kodesh Baruch Hu. Over here, it's all of Levi's upset. Lanu Chanukat Mizbeach. Kevin Shavra Chanukat Mizbeach L'Kodesh Baruch Hu. Once that was done, LaAaron God says to Aaron Levanav. Again, his children are included. Kol shvatim asu chanukah, va'atem la'atzmachem ta'asu chanukah. V'chanem ha'deber la'aron ba'alotcha, v'achkach kach et ha'levi'im. And that's why he continues talking about the Levi'im. And over here, he makes this a little bit broader about the entire Shevet. Now the question is, do we take this at face value, or is he hinting at something else? He also tells us, like we saw all the way in the beginning, ki shema ner tamid dolek. The idea that this ner is lit forever. There's a ner tamid. We always need the ner to be lit. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that it's always lit in the Mishkan, and that's true? Or the Beit HaMikdash, and that's true? There's a whole argument among the commentaries, the Mefarshim, the Monei HaMitzvot, if there's a mitzvah to light in the day or at night. But what seems to be that, there's an interesting Rambam about this, but what seems to be that if it went out, then you certainly do light it. It may not be an independent mitzvah to light, and that's part of the question, is it two mitzvot or one mitzvot? But the ner needs to always be lit. It needs to be ner tamid. So in case we thought we heard something in the Chizkuni, we'll look in the Baal HaTorim. And then ultimately we'll go back to the Ramban. Those of you who don't know, the Baal HaTorim that we have is called the Baal HaTorim HaKatzar generally. The Baal HaTorim actually wrote the Baal HaTorim HaShalem. So the difference between the Baal HaTorim HaShalem and the Baal HaTorim HaKatzar is that the Baal HaTorim HaShalem cites many, many teachings from the Ramban. So when they printed it, they said, okay, we don't need all the teachings of the Ramban. So they got rid of it, and they were left with the Baal HaTorim HaKatzar. Even though I assure you that this particular idea we're about to see is in the Katzar, and then we'll see it's also in the Ramban as well. And those of you who heard me speak last Shabbat, you know who you are, will recognize what I'm about to say from this Ramban. First, the Baal HaTorim. Balotcha teneirot, samach neirot l'chanukah. Remez l'chanukah l'persume nisa b'neirot. So he says, no, there's a Chanukah, the idea of a Chanukah Rabbayit, the consecration, he says, there's going to be another Chanukah, which is going to somehow be connected to lights and persumenisa and spreading the idea. And I'm going to come back to this. What exactly are we being mefarsem? You know, part of the mitzvah of Chanukah is lefarsem. So you say lefarsem hanes, to publicize the miracle. That's what lepersumei nisa means. What is the miracle? So you're going to tell me the miracle is the miracle of lights. The miracle of lights is that, you know, had enough candles for one day and lit for 8 days. That's wonderful. But what is the meaning of the miracle? I know that I'm not being clear. What did the miracle come to teach us? What did the miracle come to say? What did it express? What did the people understand when they saw this miracle taking place? So, I won't answer yet. The Ramban, in source number 10, Balotcha, he quotes Rashi in the beginning, and he says, V'lo nitbarerli, lama nachamu badlachata neirot, V'lo nachamu biktoret, bakar v'erev sheshavchu bo katuv, which means Aaron is going to do many other things. Why did this Midrash come and say, oh, he's going to light the candles? I mean, there are others who pose this question perhaps a little stronger, the Kli Akar. He doesn't understand the question at all. He says, but Aaron's already done lots of things. He's going to continue along doing lots of things. Why did this calm him down in source number 11? She should take the Shabbat, but be korbanot. Shabbat, because it's not lonas, 1 second. Maybe the Orachayim. We'll look at the Orachayim, and we'll go backwards. He made divrayim tzurichim zuchon levrachad zuchim biur orachaim in 12. Ma nachama zu asa lechalishut dato shel Aaron al chanukat anesiim shloya bichlal. Why did this make him feel better that he wasn't included? Hello in masem menorah makbil lechanukah. Gam lama niach dato b'chol korbanot shu makrim. Lama lo he niach dato b'chol korbanot shu ikriv. Tmidim u'musafim v'aktoret. Gam hakorvat lechanukah atzma shekol anesiim arei hu hamakriv. Lama lo ritzu elo b'menorah. I mean, he asks an excellent question. Aaron, you know, of all people who have ever felt disenfranchised or displaced, is Aaron really somebody who's displaced? Is Aaron really somebody, you know, oh, I have no role in this whatsoever? Again, the way that I phrased it was maybe he's afraid that this death which has begun with Nadav and Avihu is going to spread. That's very frightening. That when you realize again, but again, neither the Ramban nor the Or HaChaim said what I'm saying right now, but, which is why I said I think I phrased it a little bit stronger. Maybe that answers the question a little bit better, that Aaron really feels that there's something terribly going on. But Aaron is not the one who's never had anything to do with anything in the Mishkan till this point, and moving forward, he's going to have plenty of things to do with the Mishkan. I mean, that should be very clear. So part of what troubles the Ramban is, what is this going to help us at all? Why would this, the fact that he's like the candles of all things, going to placate him? So the Ramban, back in source number 10, says, V'kol v'korbanot v'nechot chavrav v'vadat yom kippurim she'enu k'sher elabo v'nechazas l'fnei v'lefnim, and all the things he's going to do, including Yom Kippur. He's the star of the show. And Rashi says that he was so upset at this point. And he's going to bless in God's name. He's going to give the bracha. He's going to bring the Shekhinah down when he blesses, and so on. And him and his entire tribe are holy, selected for God. Why should he be so depressed? But lo korbano gadol mishel nesiim, isn't actually his role and his korban even greater than what they did? Aaron was involved every single day. So he says, I'm really, really don't understand this midrash and what Rashi quotes from it. That he didn't get to bring an offering. So he just says, I don't understand. And he added in this element, they made a voluntary offering and he didn't get to do the voluntary offering. Okay. So the Ramban, as I said, is troubled. But then he explains it. Aval inyan ha-gadah hazo, the idea behind this teaching, this midrash, lidrosh remez, he uses two great words together, lidrosh remez, to teach us a hint. Min ha-parsha al chanukah shel neirot, shehaita bebayit sheni, ayidei Aaron uvanav Ritzoni lomar chashmonai kohen gadol ubanav. That he says this whole thing, as far as I'm concerned, the Rabban says, is really a hint to tell us about Chanukah. And this is something we need to understand a little bit more. What exactly is the hint and what exactly is the message? Skipped a line here. Avol, he says it's for Chanukah. So Rabban is telling you, I didn't make this up. I found this in Megillat Stim L'Rabbeinu Nisim. Sheizkira gada hazu. He quoted this midrash for Omer. Re'iti b'midrash kevin shekrivu shnei masar shvatim v'lo kriv shevet Levi v'chule. Amar lo kadosh baruch hu l'moshe daber l'aron v'amarte elav. Tell him, yesh Chanukah acheret. Sheyesh ba hadlakat ha'nerot. Vani oseba l'Yisrael yedei banecha. Nisim v'tshua v'chanukah shekru al shmam. V'hu Chanukat beit chashmonai. So the Ramban over here, again, he's quoting Rabbeinu Nisim. He says something phenomenal, and I really want to make sure that we understand it. What was the purpose of the lighting? What is the purpose of the lights? The purpose is to show that God is with us. Again, let's think again. The lights we saw in the Midrash represent the lights that were with us all through the desert. And in the desert, it was manifest, it was clear that God was with us. God was with us protecting us. God was protecting us from the elements, and God was protecting us from other nations. God was there, not just lighting the trail, telling us which way to go. God was protecting us completely throughout. And the Midrash says that we light in order to recognize that God is with us. Now, I just want to pause for a second. The whole time that we have a Mishkan, and we have a Beit HaMikdash, and I don't know how to phrase this, we're spiritually safe, we're spiritually satisfied, not in a negative way, that God is with us. We sense it, we know it, we have a Beit HaMikdash. Again, the Shekhinah is there. There are miracles that happen every single day. It's real. The Beit HaMikdash is real. You know, you just take, you know, this microcosm, the Ma'ariv Kohen, what the Kohen Gadol look like. This is real. So if we now think about this, what it's teaching us is that the Nisim did this lighting for when there is going to be a Beit HaMikdash operational, but then Aaron's children, the Kohanim, the Chashmonaim, are going to fight when there is not a Beit HaMikdash, and the Mityavnim, now we're getting to the important point, the Mityavnim are going to say, old-fashioned religion, it's no longer relevant, it's no longer something which is important to us. The Beit HaMikdash and old-fashioned Jewish rituals don't speak to us anymore. The Greeks have replaced them. Greek culture is something which is superior. The idea that of the miracle of the lights was to show everyone that the Shekhinah is with us, God is with us, this is not an old-fashioned religion, that God is with the Jewish people. That was the message that the Maccabees understood, which means it's one thing that they fought, and they fought against those who desecrated the temple, okay? That's my national pride, right? Many people will get upset if people go and stamp where a temple stands or perhaps even where it once stood. People get very upset. But the idea that there was a miracle of lights, that the lights then lasted for 8 days, that shows that God is still with us, which means the Persume Nisa is, I know it's the miracle of the lights lasted for 8 days, but the point is, what does that represent? It represents that God is with the Jewish people. It represents that the Shekhinah is with us. It represents that God is still with us, which means the same way, again, that's why I'm repeating this, the same way that God was with us when we left Egypt and he was taking care of us, that was the sense they had right then when we had the miracle of lights. God is with us and God is taking care of us. When they had the military victory, they said, oh, God is really taking care of us. Now you just think about it. Again, I'm just tying this up in a way the Ramban didn't. That they were protected from enemies as well. And now the Maccabees feel they were protected by enemies. This is represented by the lights, which means it's so appropriate that the miracle took place in terms of lights, because the lights represent the light and the clouds and this protection that God gave. By the way, just in case you're wondering, why maybe there's really overlap between Sukkot and Hanukkah, correct. There is overlap between Sukkot and Hanukkah, and you can look back in the book of the Maccabees and understand that there was actually the first year when they had Hanukkah, they celebrated Sukkot because they missed Sukkot at least that year. And there is overlap, the 8 days and the 8 days. And the counting of the, do you count going up or going down? One of the places you look at is the korbanot that were brought on Sukkot itself, which means there's a huge amount of interaction and connection between Sukkot. But I'm saying it's much more, is that we were protected in the desert by the Sukkot and the light that went with us, which means the light is the continuation of the Sukkah. It is this continuation of this idea that the Shekhinah was truly with us as we traveled with us. But I want to go one step further, is that one of the things that we're told about the candles is that it's a ner tamid, it's forever. So I would have understood ner tamid is the mitzvah in the Mishkan or in the Beit HaMikdash. I always have to make sure that they're lit. I always have to make sure that they never go out. And then I realize that the mitzvah of Hanukkah is that I light the candles even when there's no longer a Beit HaMikdash. We still light our Hanukkah candles. Why? So it turns out, at least according to a number of the commentaries, it is Zecher LeMikdash, which means it really is remarkable, because on one level, the lighting of the Hanukkah candles should have taken place in every shul. We no longer have a Mishkan, we no longer have a Beit HaMikdash, we have a Mikdash Ma'at. Mikdash Ma'at, the microcosm of the Beit HaMikdash, is every single Beit Knesset. So therefore, there should be the mitzvah, the primary mitzvah, the real mitzvah, should be to light in every Beit Knesset. No, because we don't have a Beit HaMikdash. And it's not the case. The lighting of in the Beit Knesset is actually, comes actually almost through the back door. Oh, there's a lot of people in the Beit Knesset. Maybe this is a good way of doing Pirsumei Nisa. It's an effective way of Pirsumei Nisa, but it's not the fundamental obligation. Which means, what is the message over here? The message is one of ner tamid. And that we saw really in the language of the Midrash, that even after we will no longer have a Beit HaMikdash, so therefore there was a Chanukah Tabayit, and Aaron's being told, no, you're also going to do a Chanukah. But it's interesting, you're going to do the Chanukah Tabayit of, you know, Bayit Sheni actually had three different Beit HaMikdash, or Mikdashim, if you will, or Batei Mikdash. Dash, I guess it is. See, I see my wife shaking her head at me. She can't speak. We've silenced her. Batei Mikdash, you like? Yes. There was one that was built originally that the Greeks ransacked. They then rebuilt it. That's the by the Chashmonaim. Later on, Herod built it a third time. So it's very interesting looking at rabbinic sources when it discusses what the Mikdash looked like to know which description it is, at which time is it. Is it from the first third? Is it, you know, by the Hanukkah time? Is it towards the end? Which Beit HaMikdash is it? So how many Batei Mikdash? We actually had four. We had the first one and then three during the second one because of the construction that was done and the changes that were made at those different points in time. So going back again, I can say that there's a mitzvah whenever there's a Beit HaMikdash to have a ner tamid. And Aaron's being told, oh, you're going to do the Chanukah Bayit for this new Beit HaMikdash. Again, it will be Bayit Sheni, right, 2.0, right? One point, right? Bayit Sheni 2.0, because the first one was done by the time of Ezra, and the second one now is being done by the time of the Maccabees. Later on, the third one will be done by Herod. And Aaron, you're going to do this Chanukah Bayit, and the lighting of the candles is going to be the symbol, which of course you have to ask, why is lighting the candles going to be a symbol? Maybe they should have brought Korbanot. By the way, there is another Ramban, which is, I think, very interesting and very compelling. The Ramban is back in last week's Parsha, and he tells us, here it is in Source 13, he says, V'nei Hashem HaNechbad Hiskim Al Dat HaNesim V'tzivan Nasi Achad L'Yom Yakrivu. Again, this came from them. The Chanukah Tabayit came from below. It was this desire of each person to do something to help consecrate it. U'lefichach Yitachein Shehi Mitzvah L'Dorot Shechanchu L'Olam Beit HaMikdash V'Mizbeach. Is that there's always in every generation, and he says it's going to be, it was done by the Beit Rishon, by Cheney, it's going to be done, there will be another Chanukah. So this is really interesting, because then it comes out that the Chanukat HaBayit, which is done by the Maccabees, was done with lighting, which goes back to Aaron's Chanukat HaBayit. But that's a Ner Tamid. After the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, we still light Chanukah candles. And why do we light Chanukah candles? Because we still sense the miracle that God is with us. That's the miracle. We still sense God's protection. We still sense the Shekhinah. I just want to say one thing. I told you in the very beginning this year, the Le'iloi Nishmat, my father-in-law. My father-in-law, as my wife described, was somebody who was a Jew in a certain sense, a very, very simple Jew. But we need a lot of simple Jews like this, Jews of simple faith. And simple faith is the most wonderful thing. Simple thing. I saw a wonderful quote from Rabbi Soloveitchik, and it was something to the effect of, I don't have to try to prove the existence of somebody that I love, because my love is enough to know that they exist. You need to prove something that you know, if you love something, you don't have to prove it. It's there. And that's really what simple faith is. Simple faith is, you know, this is who we are as a people, this is our God, and this is what we do. So there's a man who never missed minyan, a 6 o'clock minyan, for however many years it was, 40, 50 years, maybe more, never missed a minyan, because that's what Jews do. They get up in the morning, they go to shul, and they put on their talus and their trail, and they daven. They go to a minyan. That's what they do. It's just as simple as that. And it was the faith that didn't come out from learning every single ktsot, or every single vikivager, or every single, you know, pilpul. It was a faith which came, because, you know, sit and listen to the rabbi shir. Okay, and if the rabbi said something, unlike most of you, that if your rabbi says something, then you go look for a second opinion. The rabbi said something, that was it. It was as if Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain and said, this is what you must do. If he came back from Mashir, and the rabbi in shul, Rabbi Sharfman for most of the years, if Rabbi Sharfman said something, so I don't know if Rabbi Sharfman knew how many of his congregants were going to listen to him. But Moshe Linder was going to listen to him, because if that's what he said, it was as if it was Torah Misinai. That was it. The rabbi said it. It was as simple as that. And this sense that God is with us perpetually, even if you don't have a Beit HaMikdash, even if you don't have the Ananei HaKavod, even if you don't see it, that's really what the Chanukah becomes, the Ner Tamid. It continues forever, because we always know, we always sense that God is in fact with us. I just want to end off today and make a couple of comments, which afterwards you can decide are terribly politically or just terrible and so on. I find it interesting that Aaron felt disenfranchised. He felt disenfranchised because he was left out. And he was left out, and he was more blessed and more involved in Mishkan activity than any other person maybe in the history of the world. And yet Rashi's telling us, based on the Midrash, that he felt bad. He felt left out because he wasn't there. This is a natural human feeling. People that are disenfranchised, people that somehow are not included with others, even if you're very, very well off in many, many ways, feel that something is wrong and something is missing, and it impacts us. And I want to say this in two different levels. In one level, people who have not been involved in Jewish communal life for the last number of months, shuls have been closed, we've been unable to pray publicly, but safely to pray as a community. There was a sense for many people of this sense of being disenfranchised and separated, and it was painful. And it could be that somebody had everything else going for them in the world, but the disconnectedness is something which is very difficult. And the other thing that I want to address is the situation going on right now in America in terms of a population of a great deal of people who feel disenfranchised. I'm not going to say any more than that, but if Aaron felt disenfranchised, despite being Kohen Gadol, what do you think the senses of people who don't necessarily live the life the same way that others do in America? America is a wonderful country. It's a wonderful country in terms of its sense of democracy, at least in potential. At least in potential. And the reality is it doesn't always work out well. And I'm not commenting on anything else right now. I'm not commenting on what is going on because it is a very difficult situation going on. It really is a difficult situation. But if you see Aaron as a Kohen Gadol felt left out, just imagine how certain other people will feel. That's all that I'll say about that. I also find it interesting in this week's parasha, Moshe, he reaches out to somebody. Now you could say he reaches out because it was his father-in-law, right? That's very interesting. He reaches out, come with us, join us. And he says no. The other thing which I'm sure all the American rabbis are going to talk about is the Isha Kushit and so on. So I'm not even going to go there at all. But Moshe was somebody who tried to bring in others. And look at all the Erev Rav. And again, you could debate, was this something good, was something bad? When Moshe leaves Egypt, he doesn't leave people behind. When Moshe leaves Egypt, he takes with them anybody who wants to be with them. When Moshe leaves Egypt, he says, okay, there are more people that want to be here. So as I said, you know, given thought from this first Rashi in the very beginning of the Parsha, how people who Aaron himself had this feeling of remorse, as I said, I like the way that I explained it better. Rashi didn't say all the words that I said. If you want to read it into Rashi, I'm fine with that. Rashi said he wasn't included, so he felt bad. I think that the reason that behind that midrash that he felt so bad is because of what he had just gone through. A parent loses a child, God forbid, there's guilt there as well. And over here in this case, how can Aaron not feel guilt? Aaron was involved in the sin of the golden calf, and Nadin and Avihu die, and the Mishkan there is to forgive them for the golden calf, and as if God is saying, yeah, I forgive, but not everybody. There's somebody here who's responsibility. And I'm not talking reality right now. I'm talking how Aaron may have felt. And when all the other Nisi'im are involved over here and he's left out on the side, whenever somebody is on the sidelines, whenever somebody looks different, whenever somebody is not included within what everyone else is doing, it causes anxiety, it causes angst, it causes feelings which are very uncomfortable. And I'm saying that that is unfortunately part of what I think on the one hand Aaron felt, and if Aaron felt it, you could imagine people who grew up in America who sense they don't have the same opportunities. They sense that if they're stopped by the police, it's not going to be the same thing if somebody was a different skin tone and was dressed differently. It would not be the same situation. And as Jews growing up in America, it could be a lot of us felt uncomfortable as well. It could be that wearing a kippah or a certain dress that we had made us look different, and therefore we perhaps felt often as being targets as well. But our being targeted or even a sense of victimhood that we had is not the same. It's not the same. And it's something that we need to think about. If Aaron as Kohen Gadol felt disenfranchised, I'll say it again, I can't even imagine what a whole 20% of the population must feel like. Anyway, as I said from the beginning, that this year should be Iloi Nishmat, my father-in-law Moshe Chaim, Ben Matityahu, Binyamin, and Toba. And may this cause an Iloi Nishmato, and may we live in a society where nobody feels left out, and nobody feels disenfranchised, and nobody feels that they're being persecuted, and nobody, again, I'm not talking about reality even, that nobody feels that way. And when people do feel that way, we need to do all that we can to make sure that people feel this sense that of belonging. And that's part of what the Jewish ethic is. And when it comes to certainly all of our holidays, we never celebrate by ourselves. We open up our houses. We open up our doors when we bring others in. And we celebrate with the strangers who live among us. All of them have to be a part of it. It doesn't work on any other way. Because one can't celebrate by themselves. One celebrates when they invite others in as well. And as I said, that is also something which is very, very clearly part of the Jewish ethos. Anyway, everyone should have a Shabbat Shalom. Keep healthy. Keep safe. And Bezrat Hashem, we'll learn next week.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.